We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 138 of the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. Got a packed show for you guys. It is Florida week. I'll break down the Gamecocks game against the Gators on Saturday, give the top storylines, key matchups to watch, keys to the game, and give my prediction for Saturday's game. Also, have some very exciting announcements, some news and notes to get to, your listener questions, and a fantastic interview with former Gamecocks football player Alex McGrath as we break down the Gamecocks' massive upset over the Georgia Bulldogs. This Saturday's upcoming game against Florida, his time playing during the Spurrier era, life after football, and much, much more. Before we get into all that, this is a broadcast to our friends over at SeatGeek. Yes, SeatGeek, the best ticket buying app by far, the only ticket buying app I use, and the only one I'd recommend. SeatGeek has tickets to anything and everything that you need, from concerts, comedy club events. It doesn't have to be sports. But, of course, your South Carolina Gamecocks sporting events. If you need tickets to the game Saturday against Florida, any game the rest of this season, whether you're going to Knoxville, you're going to go see Vandy, App State, you're going to College Station, or if you want to see the Clemson game, if you need tickets to any of your South Carolina Gamecocks sporting events, even outside of football, because you know basketball season's coming up, baseball season will be here before you know it, anything and everything else, SeatGeek has got your tickets. They've got a great ticket rating system where they actually rate the tickets for you guys based on the type of deal you're getting. So it's really going to give you that peace of mind before you click the buy button. You're going to know before you check out whether you're getting a steal, whether you're getting ripped off. It's going to make sure that you get the most bang for your buck and get the exact tickets that you are looking for. Again, that SeatGeek, use the promo code SPURSUP. You're going to save $20 off your first purchase. Again, that's our friends over at SeatGeek. Go download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP, S-P-U-R-S-U-P, to save $20 off your first purchase. All right, let's get into it. All right, I'm Chris Phillips, your host as always. Packed show today as the Florida Gators are coming to town. Gamecocks trying to beat a second straight top 10 ranked opponent in the Florida Gators, ranked ninth in the AP poll right now. Exciting week for South Carolina as South Carolina finally comes back home to Williams-Brice in what should be a great environment for football. Should be a fantastic football Saturday. We finally got some football weather, and I know we're all really excited about it. Before we dive into the Florida game itself and we start breaking that down, have some housekeeping items to get to and some really, really exciting announcements as far as some changes upcoming with the Spurs Up Show. You guys know I'm very open and honest with you guys, and I just, for whatever reason, I like to keep the listeners of this show in the loop as to what's going on, whether it be content-wise, business-wise, my personal life-wise, whatever. We have a relationship here. I want to keep you guys informed in the know. Something I'm really, really excited about, I've been kind of pondering this for a couple weeks now, and there's been some things happening on the business side of things with the podcast and kind of the direction I want to take the business and stuff like that. But something I'm really excited about that's only going to be a positive. So long story short, I'm basically going to be doubling, if not tripling down on the podcast. We all know the podcast of the Spurs Up Show brand is the bread and butter, if you will. Obviously, right now the setup is two shows per week, have the Daily Crow segments, which are video segments, the vlog, which is awesome, the articles on the website, other small different pieces of supplementary content, if you will. But I'm doubling, tripling down on the podcast, like I said. Daily podcast shows are coming to the Spurs Up Show. Now, what does that mean for the future? What that means is nothing that you know right now is going to change. You're still going to have the Monday and Thursday shows with me giving my thoughts and opinions on the game that just happened and the game upcoming, similar to this one. You're still going to have those big guest interviews on Monday and Thursday, but I'm going to be adding more of what you guys love. Again, I'm taking a lot of feedback from people. The podcast is the bread and butter of the Spurs Up Show. It's something you guys seem to really enjoy, and I want to give you guys more of that because, again, you know, it kind of felt like, again, just to be completely transparent to you guys, for example, the Daily Crow segments that I've done, they're really cool. I enjoy them. But I thought to myself, why not just put that on the podcast and in podcast format? Why not just kind of consolidate that and put it to where it's more easily accessible to the people that want to hear that information? And that is the people that are subscribed to this show and that listen to this show and that are loyal listeners to the show. So long story short, basically, there are going to be daily shows added in on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm really, really excited to announce that because today's guest, Alex McGrath, if you're not familiar with him, he played for South Carolina and Steve Spurrier from 2005 to 2008, was mostly a special teams player, played a little bit of tight end. If you were a diehard Gamecock fan back in those days, you probably do remember his name at least, if nothing else. He's actually going to have a daily Tuesday segment with me. So that will, we've already got Tuesday's show figured out. That'll be kind of his show. It'll be me and him talking for 15 or 20 minutes, kind of getting his thoughts. He's a guy that's very knowledgeable, obviously, the game of football. Like I said, played tight end in college, played quarterback in high school, was under Steve Spurrier. He knows what a successful college football program looks like, and a guy who's very well-spoken, as you'll hear in the interview, and has a lot of great insight and opinions, in my opinion. I'm very, very excited to bring him on for that Tuesday segment. What will Wednesday and Friday be? I think it'll probably be just kind of a random whatever that week calls for, because obviously basketball season's coming up, and you know right now in football there are certain things you could break it down, but basketball season's coming up, which will give us even more content to talk about. And who knows, Tuesdays might even get mixed up too. I'm planning on, when once we get into basketball season and baseball season, bringing a former Gamecock on like this and letting them have a daily, like one of the days will be them and I talking about, you know, what's going on in that South kind of sport that week. I think it's just going to be a nice 15 to 20, maybe 25 minute segment for you guys to hear from a former Gamecock athlete on their opinions and their takes. I know as much as you guys like hearing from me, it'll be nice to get someone else with kind of a fresh opinion, if you will. So that'll be added on Tuesday. And like I said, Wednesday and Friday will be kind of just random, whatever that week calls for. I'm sure Friday, a lot of the season will be just kind of breaking down going into that Saturday, what the, you know, just what the game, what entails of the game, maybe kind of expand on the prediction, if you will. But basically, long story short, again, I know I'm rambling right now, but daily podcast shows, you're still going to get Monday, Thursday with the, you know, the big show, if you will, with myself and then the guest. But Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, adding on daily shows, basically just replacing the Daily Crow is pretty much what it's doing. Because like I said, as much as I enjoyed the Daily Crow, and I still do enjoy it, I figure why not bring it to the podcast platform? Bring it to the people that want, really, really want to hear it and where it makes the most sense. And it really makes business sense for me as well, not to dive too deep into that and bore you guys. But really excited for that. Who knows, may even have some Saturday and Sunday shows. You never know if it gets to that point where I feel like it. We're just going to roll through this thing 7 days a week. But if nothing else, the minimum 5 days a week, you're going to get the Spurs Up Show. I'm very, very excited about that. And excited to have Alex McGrath on Tuesday as well, at least for the rest of the football season, just to kind of get his takes, his opinions. I'm really excited about that. Also, one other thing, because of the – so basically what the switch was is I've changed over. You guys probably know that Buzzsprout was my hosting platform before. I've now switched over to Red Circle, which that means nothing for you guys, obviously. But one cool thing they're doing now is every podcast is going to be published on YouTube now. So if you want to listen to the Spurs Up Show podcast on YouTube, the Spurs Up Show is on YouTube. Go to YouTube, look up the Spurs Up Show. Every single episode is going to be on YouTube from here on out, starting with actually the Monday show is posted on there. It's really awesome. They're actually awesome about it. They take care of all the work for me, which is really honestly one of the big reasons that the podcast didn't get posted to YouTube in the past because it was such a hassle. But they do all that work for me. Every show is going to be on YouTube. So if you are somebody that likes to listen to podcasts on YouTube, because I know there are some people like that, it is available on YouTube. I think it had like over 100 plays on YouTube, which is awesome. They just give people another opportunity, another outlet, if you will, to listen to the show. But other than that, it's business as usual, and it is game week. South Carolina taking on Florida. Let's jump right into it. Noon kick at Williams-Brice Stadium on ESPN. The line in this one is really, really interesting in my opinion. I think Gamecocks opened up as a 6.5-point underdog, I believe. That line has since moved down. It was down to +5 Wednesday morning, now down to +4.5. So Money is pouring in on South Carolina right now. Over-under set at 48. The series history, Florida leads 27-9-3. South Carolina, though, leads 5-4 in this decade. So Gamecocks, if they can win Saturday, will own they'll have the winning percentage. They'll be 6-4. They'll have the overall for the decade. They'll win the decade, basically. So something to really play for, obviously, besides just beating a top 10 team and beating the Florida Gators. Last time they met, we all remember last year's game. Florida won 35-31 in a game that I think we'd all agree was one that South Carolina really let slip away. As far as the injury report, I'm sure we'll know more tomorrow night, which is Thursday night, on Will Muschamp's call-in show, but as far as we know, I think everybody that we expect is good to go is good to go. Obviously, I think Keir Thomas is probably still out. But other than that, Ryan Helinski, the big one, obviously, Will Muschamp keeps saying he's good to go. Dak Joyner has practiced all week as well. So it looks like South Carolina is about as healthy as they can be at this point in the year, which is something very welcome to say since last year was so crazy with the injuries and stuff like that. Breaking down Florida really quick, and then we'll get into the storylines. Gators, they're coached by Dan Mullen, obviously, ninth in the AP poll, with wins over Miami, UT Martin, Kentucky, Tennessee, Towson, Auburn, and then a loss to LSU, which last week was, I'd probably say, the game of the week down in Tiger Stadium, down in Death Valley. I think it was like a 3-5 matchup or something like that, and LSU won the game by 14 points, which, again, LSU, in my opinion, not to get off topic, is on a completely different planet right now. But Florida, a good football team, no question. I mean, they were a team that I'll say, and I'm going to get into this more in just a second, but a team that I think people didn't really have. I know a lot of the media had high expectations for them in the preseason, but I think South Carolina fans, including myself, were very, very skeptical about it. They're similar to South Carolina in the fact that Felipe Franks, their starting quarterback, down with an injury early in the season. Since then, Kyle Trask has taken over, and a lot of Gators fans, he was better than Felipe Franks anyways, has played really, really good football for the University of Florida. And the Gators feeling good. Again, a top 10 team, only one loss on the season, and it was to LSU, who's regarded maybe the best team in the country right now. But let's get into the top storylines. It revolves around the Gamecocks starting quarterback. That is Ryan Helinski's. My top storyline in this game is Ryan Helinski's health. Listen, we've heard all week that Ryan Helinski is good to go, that he's taken all the reps, that he's practiced, but my biggest point to this, I talked about this on the radio with Mark Ryan on Wednesday afternoon. My biggest thing with this is this, that when that knee is a sensitive thing. It's a very, very sensitive thing. And Ryan Helinski, when you have to get pulled from the game, I understand he couldn't protect himself and it's precautionary reasons, but I will just be very, very intrigued to see just how healthy is Ryan Helinski. Because, listen, I'm not trying to put it out there, if you will, but we've heard Will Muschamp say one thing about injuries and them either be worse or be better. So Will Muschamp has been known to have that type of gamesmanship. How healthy is Ryan Helinski? His health is going to be key in this football game, in my opinion. Obviously, again, the knee is just something not to mess with, and I think South Carolina's got to do a really, really good job protecting him, because one bad hit to the knee, I'm going to be very curious to see how does Ryan Helinski react after that first hit, because you know Florida is going to try to come after him. They know that he's injured back there. He's at least not 110%. Again, I'm not saying that I 100% believe Ryan Helinski is going to start the game. I said on today's radio show, I think he's probably 90%. Listen, everybody on the team, on everybody's team is sore somewhere. You're not 100% healthy at this point in the year, but the knee is just something that you really don't want to mess with. I mean, it's something that can be – it's been career-ending for guys. It's something that, again, it's really tough to protect yourself if that knee is not right. So I'm not saying he's not healthy, but I'm keeping a very, very close eye on just how healthy is Ryan Helinski, because to me, South Carolina is going to need a fully healthy Ryan Helinski, and him playing his best, him playing like his normal self to win this football game on Saturday. Another big storyline for me. Obviously, Gamecocks coming off a huge, huge upset win on the road at Georgia. One of the biggest wins in program history. I'll take a phrase from Will Muschamp. So what, now what? How does this team react after a win? One of the biggest wins in school history. Because, listen, we've seen this before. I mean, we've seen this movie before with South Carolina football, where the Gamecocks get a huge upset win and they fail to show up the next week. I think some things going against that narrative. This weekend, I like the fact the game's at home. I like the fact that it's not South Carolina's not playing Vanderbilt. They're playing the ninth-ranked Florida Gators. If you can't get up for that game, you don't have a pulse. But so what, now what? You know, can South Carolina bottle up that same intensity and that same energy they had against the Georgia Bulldogs and bring that Saturday against Florida? Can they do that? Because that, you know, that type of performance we saw at Georgia, I mean, that was really the first time we've seen that against, at least against that level of competition, hell, in the entire Muschamp era. But can they bottle that up? Can they come out with the same intensity, the same energy, the same, you know, want to, the same get after it, and take it to Florida the same way they took it to Georgia? Because again, you know the guys on South Carolina's team all week, they've been getting pat on the back, telling how great they are. I mean, South, you know, and you're not wrong if you're doing this, but South Carolina fans, I mean, I think right now I'm still on cloud nine. It's Wednesday night. I'm still on cloud nine from the Georgia game. I'm still watching replays and watching highlights. Hell, I'll probably be watching replays and highlights till the end of the season. That one was so sweet. I mean, that game will never get old. That's one of the great USC memories in my entire lifetime. But for South Carolina's team, they can't have that mindset. You've got to flip the switch, get back on the field, and turn all of the focus to Florida and really completely wipe away what happened in Athens, Georgia, and focus on the task at hand. So, again, I will just be interested to see what is the mindset. Is this a team that comes out that looks like it's been reading its own press clippings, or is this a team that comes out fired up, even more motivated, knowing it's got something it can really play for and achieve this year with the way the SEC East is kind of going bananas right now? I'll be very interested to see just kind of how this team responds to a huge upset and carrying that momentum into a home game at Williams-Brice against another top 10 team. Another big storyline in this one, Florida Gators, the injuries up front. Florida dealing with some injuries up front that I think I know for a fact are really, really going to affect their pass rush. Zuniga and Greenard, the two star defensive ends for Florida, out for this one Saturday, which I think is huge. It's huge for South Carolina in the sense because South Carolina's offensive line needs to have a great game. They need to protect Ryan Helinski and make sure he stays upright. You cannot have him taking too many hits back there. I already talked about the knee and the health of that. You know, one bad hit there, and it might be over for him for this game, if nothing else. So I think that's huge. Florida dealing with some injuries. You know, South Carolina was bitten by the injury bug last year against the Florida Gators. So Florida kind of getting a taste of South Carolina's medicine. It'll be interesting to see how Florida kind of overcomes that because you know they're going to try to come after Ryan Helinski. You know they're going to try to be aggressive in the run game. Florida's still got talent up front. They've still got an extremely talented defense. But how does the loss of those two big edge rushers affect what Florida can do defensively and what South Carolina tries to do offensively? I'll be interested to see. Another big storyline for this one against this Florida Gators team. Like I mentioned, South Carolina looking for two straight wins over top 10 teams. Now, Florida, they are a top 10 team, or are they? That's my thing because, listen, as of like 2 weeks ago, I thought this Florida team was extremely overrated. I mean, the wins against were who? They were against who? Miami, UT Martin, Kentucky, Tennessee, who's awful, Towson. They beat nobody. Nobody 5 weeks in. They had beaten no one 5 weeks in. I thought Auburn was going to go into the swamp, absolutely steamroll Florida. I really thought they were going to do it. I thought Florida was super, super, super overrated. Florida won that game. And I thought to myself going into the LSU game last week that, you know, because I do the SEC gambling picks, that Florida deserves some respect. And I took them plus 14 or a plus 13. They lost by 14. I lost a bet, but they still had a good game. But in my opinion, I think the jury is still out on Florida. Is Florida really a top 10 team? And I'm not taking anything away from South Carolina, obviously. I'm not taking anything away from our guys who win the game because they are what their ranking says they are. I mean, they're ninth in the country. They've lost one football game to a team that's in the top three right now. But I think this game's going to also tell a lot about the Florida Gators. Like, are they really a top 10 team? Are they a legit contender or are they a pretender? Are they what South Carolina fans thought they were before the season even started? This one almost kind of reminds me, to be honest with you. I know it's a completely different scenario and the game was way earlier in the season. But the 2009 Ole Miss game, when Ole Miss came in with the late Jevon Snead, RIP Jevon Snead, by the way. The late Jevon Snead, though, and they were riding high and they were feeling themselves. You know, I understand that Ole Miss and Florida are not the same type of programs, but it kind of has that same feel to it where Florida's a top 10 team, but South Carolina's only a 4.5-point underdog. And, I mean, even with South Carolina beating Georgia, for the Gamecocks to be only a 4.5-point underdog to a team who's supposed to be a legitimate top 10 team, something smells fishy. You know, something's got to give. So I think we're going to find out a lot about the Gators on Saturday, probably more, even more so about the Gators than we will about the Gamecocks on Saturday. the 4-3 against Kyle Trask, like I mentioned, I think one of the big storylines throughout the rest of this season, really, but certainly for this game, Will Muschamp talking about his Tuesday presser. He had kind of a coming to Jesus moment, if you will, where he looked at the Gamecocks defensive scheme after the Missouri game. And I'll tell you this, those comments, a lot of you have asked me, do you think Will Muschamp is calling defensive plays now? To me, that was the biggest giveaway ever, that he has taken over this defense completely. I mean, he'll never admit it and obviously throw his guy T-Rob under the bus, which he shouldn't. But to me, it's a no-doubt or no-brainer that Will Muschamp has got control over this defense right now, and it's obviously working. Kyle Trask, a guy like I talked about, has been really good for Florida. I think Florida fans are really happy with him. A lot of them wanted this change. They weren't huge fans of Felipe Franks to begin with, and it's worked out pretty well for him. Kyle Trask has played good football. But how does Will Muschamp's updated scheme play against guys like LaMichael Perine, these great wide receivers for Florida? Kyle Trask, who has been so efficient, is taking care of the football. That chess match between Will Muschamp and this Florida offense and Dan Mullen, really, is going to be very, very interesting going into Saturday. Another huge storyline for the Gamecocks. Israel Mukwamu, what does he have in store for an encore? I mean, a guy that's coming off a 3-interception type game. Everybody telling him all week how great he is, getting all the accolades, which deservedly so. What does he and this secondary really do for an encore? Because like I mentioned, the Gators have got studs on the outside. Freddie Swain, Van Jefferson, Kyle Pitts. I mean, guys that can make big plays. You look at this Florida receiving core. It's three touchdowns. They spread the football out. There's no question about that. I'm not taking anything away from what Israel Mukwamu did or what the defense did or the secondary did. But let's face it, Georgia, their weakness was on the outside. Florida, on the other hand, they have got really good wide receivers. What is a guy like Israel Mukwamu, what is this defense, and specifically this secondary, what do they do for an encore? Because I think it would be crazy if you see Israel Mukwamu go on the first or second drive and get another pick. You're going to think, never throw to this guy again, which, I mean, obviously I'd love to see that. But was that a one-time thing? Or is this something that starts to spark where South Carolina starts to collect turnovers in bunches, if you will. Lastly, real quick, last storyline, Professor Muschamp. Professor Muschamp, hashtag fear the frames, been trending all over social media. I think they're giving out fake Will Muschamp readers at the entrance of the student section. It's obviously taking off. Can South Carolina go to 3-0 in games where Will Muschamp is wearing the readers? That has become a huge storyline. I mean, honestly, if South Carolina wins this football game on Saturday, I don't think Will Muschamp can ever take them damn things off. If I ever see your eyeballs again without readers on, I will come and I will find you and put the readers back on your face. No, seriously, it's a fun thing. The readers, I think, will be really, really funny in the stadium. I think that's a hilarious idea. Whoever came up with that idea, kudos to you, because that is hysterical, in my opinion. It will look very awesome in the stadium. Bunch of people wearing readers, spinning towels. Going to be crazy. But, yeah, hashtag fear the frames, man. Can South Carolina go to 3-0 when he's wearing glasses? We'll have to see. All right, let's dive into the key matchups to watch here. I got three key matchups to watch. I think are going to go a long way in winning this football game. And the first one is a guy that I just talked about, defensive back Israel Mukwamu against wide receiver Van Jefferson. We all know what Israel Mukwamu did. Fantastic game. The game of his Gamecock career thus far, 3 interceptions, a pick six. Van Jefferson on the other side for Florida, tied for the team lead with 3 touchdowns. He's got a long of 69 yards. He's also a big dude, 6'2", big body wide receiver. Obviously, here's Mukwamu, got 2 inches on him at 6'4", which Mukwamu's a freak physically. We all know that. But how does Israel Mukwamu, and again, this goes to the rest of the secondary, because there will be a lot of other big matchups, but I think it's interesting because I don't think quarterbacks are really throwing at J.C. Horn's man all that much. For kind of the crap I gave J.C. Horn early in the season for not having a pick, which he still needs to get one, but they're not throwing his way a whole lot. So Israel Mukwamu, I think that's one of the reasons he had the big game on Saturday, because for whatever reason, Georgia thought, hey, if we're going to take a chance, we're going to take it on this guy. We can take advantage of 24, and it turned out they couldn't. Van Jefferson, a guy, though, is going to be a different level than any Georgia receiver that Israel Mukwamu saw on Saturday. How does he handle it? I think this will be a great hands match, a great battle. I think you're going to see a lot of man-to-man on the outside. I think Will Muschamp's going to let a guy like Israel Mukwamu play man-to-man, get up on his man and make Van Jefferson prove that he's going to beat him one-on-one. So I think this is going to be a really good one. Two guys that I think will probably be playing on Sundays at some point. So that's going to be one you really want to keep your eye on. Again, that just defensive back, Israel Mukwamu against wide receiver Van Jefferson. Second key matchup, running back Rico Dowdle against linebacker David Reese. The second, Reese, a senior, 53 total tackles on the year, 2 tackles for loss, 1 sack. This Florida defense, they're big, they're fast, they're physical. David Reese is no exception. He's all over the place. He's all over the field for Florida. Rico Dowdle, obviously, we know what he's done, having a fantastic year, his best year in Garnet and Black without question. And is the Gamecocks' undisputed number one running back. I think it's pivotal in this game, like any other. I mean, I think South Carolina needs to and will continue to have the identity of they're going to run the football, they're going to be physical, and that's how they're going to win football games. They're going to run the football and stop the run, which I think is a great recipe. So that's what makes this matchup to me so pivotal because, again, with the health of Ryan Helinski, and listen, Ryan Helinski may come out Saturday and be 110%, be slinging it around and make me look stupid. I'm just a little skeptical. I want to see it. That's all I'm saying. But South Carolina is still going to try to run the football. I expect Rico Dowdle to touch the football 20 to 25 times. Can he make a guy like David Reese miss? Can South Carolina account for him in the running game? Because Will Muschamp's talked about plenty of times before. In the running game, you're never going to block everybody. You got to make a guy miss. And that's something Rico Dowdle, I think, is doing a lot better this year. He's making guys miss. He's running through contact. That should be a great matchup. Rico Dowdle against David Reese should be a phenomenal matchup in the running game to watch all day on Saturday. And then my third key matchup, this one, you guys might find a little interesting because I don't know that I've had a key matchup in special teams yet this year. But there is a very, very intriguing matchup in this football game, and it involves two punters. That's right. Punter Joseph Charlton against punter Tommy Townsend. Tommy Townsend and Joseph Charlton, really, but Tommy Townsend regarded as one of the best punters in the country. I still think Joseph Charlton's not getting the national love he deserves, but that is a topic for a whole nother podcast. Tommy Townsend this year, 44.89 yard average. Charlton, 48.81 yard average. Dude is hitting bombs this year. This is a game, though, to me that I expected to be a fairly low-scoring game. Again, over-under set at 48 right now. I said the best bet in this game was the under. I think it's a 20-17, 23-20 type game. And in a game like this, and in a game where you're trying to upset a top-10 opponent, similar to what you did at Georgia, field position is so pivotal in a game like this. I thought one of the things South Carolina did really well last week, they never gave Georgia the short field. Even when DeCarion Joyner came in that second half, and you know the Gamecocks offense, I'm not saying they were completely stale, but they weren't moving the ball the way they were earlier in the game. They were able to pin Georgia deep in their own territory, and that's thanks to the bomb of a leg of Joseph Charlton. I think this is going to be a great duel. I think both teams, you're going to see both teams punt, and the team that can win the field position battle is going to go a long way in winning this football game. It's going to be two great legs going at it, two guys that are, again, going to be kicking on Sundays, no doubt. So, again, punter Joseph Charlton against punter Tommy Townsend. If you love special teams football, if you love punters, you're going to love this one on Saturday between these two guys. All right, let's get into the keys to the game here. My first key to the game, protect Ryan Helinski. It is a no-brainer in my opinion. Obviously, Florida about their top two pass rushers, but they are still fast. They are still physical. They are still very big up front. And I fully expect them to come after Ryan Helinski on Saturday. I'm not saying they're going to do anything dirty, but I do think their message in their coaching room and then their staff is saying to their players, get after this dude. We know he's on a leg that's not 100%. Don't do anything dirty, but get after him. Make him uncomfortable. Hit him as much as you can. The Gamecocks offensive line needs to have one of its best games of the season in protecting Ryan Helinski, keeping him upright, making sure his jersey stays clean. Not only that he just gets time to throw, but that he stays healthy, that he plays this entire football game. I think that's going to be a huge key to this game is how often, how dirty is Ryan Helinski's jersey at the end of this football game. That'll tell you a lot about who won the game. My second key to the game, make Kyle Trask uncomfortable. So kind of on the flip side here, the Gamecocks defensive line, who has been so good, has been so, so good this year. I'm a full believer in the Gamecocks defensive line and Javon Kinlaw, Kobe Smith, Zach Pickens, Rick Sandage, you know, J.J. Ngbare, you know, Aaron Sterling, all these dudes. I mean, guys I'm not even naming, all these dudes, guys that have made big play after big play after big play, again, led by Javon Kinlaw, who was named this week as a midseason All-American. So excited for what that defensive line is doing right now. But can you make Kyle Trask uncomfortable? Just make him uncomfortable. Like I said, he's been very efficient. He's taking care of the football. He's done a great job for Florida. This is the type of game where you need to upset his timing. Similar almost to what South Carolina did to Jake Fromm. I think it really is going to be similar to that, where the Gamecocks, listen, they have LaMichael Perine. I know that Florida's going to try to run the football. They've got those great weapons on the outside. How do you limit him getting the ball to those weapons on the outside? You get pressure on him. You make him uncomfortable. You make him make decisions under duress. And the Gamecocks defensive backs have shown they're good enough to make plays on a ball up in the air that's just thrown up. So make Kyle Trask uncomfortable. I think, again, both lines of scrimmage, a really, really big key to the game on Saturday. My final key, my third and final key to the game, win the turnover battle. Win the turnover battle. It's that simple. When you're trying to upset a top 10 team, whether we actually believe Florida's a top 10 team or not, are they really that good? I don't know. But when you're trying to upset a top 10 team, when you're trying to win a game that you're an underdog in, again, very, very similar to what South Carolina did in Athens. The Gamecocks won that game because they won the turnover battle, and they got the key timely turnovers and the turnovers that were big plays, a.k.a. Israel McCormick's pick six. South Carolina, this is not going to be a game where you win this football game if you lose the turnover battle, in my opinion. Like I said, when it comes down to a game like this, and I think it is a coin flip game, I think it is a 23-20, 20-17 type of score game, either way it goes, the turnover battle is going to be key to this one. I would say whoever wins that turnover battle, you can look at it at the end of the game on Saturday. Whoever wins that turnover battle, that's who's going to win the game, just period. It's really that simple. So, again, my keys to the game, protect Ryan Helinski, make Kyle Trask uncomfortable, and win the turnover battle on Saturday afternoon. All right, let's jump into my prediction. My prediction for Saturday's game, like I said, I think this one's a coin flip. I really do. I think it's interesting what's happening in Vegas with the line. Gamecocks open as a 6.5-point dog, now down to 4.5. I'll be honest with you. It kind of makes me nervous a little bit because anytime the public – is betting on a certain side, you generally don't want to bet on that side because the public doesn't normally know what it's talking about. But either way, Vegas aside, I think this is a really interesting game. South Carolina coming in with a ton of momentum, obviously beating the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, Williams-Brice should be packed. It's going to be a raucous environment. You've got Florida, who's got all this talent on the outsides. They're coming. It's almost the flip of what South Carolina's coming off of, the emotional wave they're coming off, what Florida's coming off. They're coming off a really physical, tough game, which they lost. I'm sure a game which Florida fans feel like maybe they should have won. I don't know. But anyways, their team is coming off a tough, physical night game at Tiger Stadium. It's a noon kick. Are the Gators really going to be there mentally? Are they going to be there ready to play? South Carolina, on the other hand, I think the health of Ryan Helinski is something to really, really keep an eye on. I like DeKerryon Joyner. I like his playmaking ability with his feet. But let's be realistic. He cannot throw the football the way you need to in an SEC game to win. South Carolina's defense, like I mentioned, I'm fully a believer in. Whatever Will Muschamp did, if it was just changing up schematics, if it was – some of you said, is it because Jamias Williams transferred? Sure. If that's what it was, fine. But whatever's happened on defense has worked. Everyone from each level, from defensive line to linebackers to secondary, everybody – and I mean everybody – has stepped their game up on the defensive side of the football. I'm fully a believer until I'm proven otherwise that this Gamecocks defense has turned a corner. Florida on their side, they've got a very, very good defense, fast, physical, big, a typical Florida defense. I mean, it's really what it comes down to. This is a game to me that, you know, a lot of you have asked me, and I'm not going to spend a bunch of time talking about this, but a lot of you asked me, you know, what's the verdict on Muschamp? Are you eating crow now? I got asked that on the radio. Are you eating crow? Like, you want to apologize to Will Muschamp, yada, yada, yada. Listen, I tip my cap to what happened. But I think you're going to see almost a bigger coaching job, or you're going to get more of a grade, if you will. I don't even know what the right verbiage is here. But we're really going to know what type of coach we have in the performance that we see on Saturday. And you're going to hear me and Alex McGrath talk about that in the interview, actually. But I think you're going to know a lot about the type of coaching we have from this game Saturday, because – coaching a team up to go get an upset, obviously huge thing. Like I said, tip of the cap. But how do you respond after that? How do you respond after that? How do you get your team ready to play? How do you keep your team focused and not get full of themselves? Which they shouldn't, because, again, Florida's a top 10 team. It's not like you're playing Vanderbilt or App State where you could even possibly overlook them. But how to can South Carolina take that same energy and intensity they had in Athens and bring it to Williams-Brice on Saturday and take it to Florida? I think you're going to see – a lot. Again, you're going to know a lot about our coaching staff from that. I already mentioned, tip of the cap, I did eat a little bit of crow after South Carolina beat Georgia, which I'm more than happy. I'd love to eat a whole slice of crow on Saturday in Williams-Brice Stadium after we beat Florida by 50, if that happens. I'd love that. But all I think South Carolina fans wanted to see after UNC and early in the season, we just want to know that progress was happening. And I think the first step to that we saw in Athens, Georgia. Now comes this game. I don't think South Carolina's ever beaten two top 10 teams in a row. You have a chance to do a first here. You have a chance to completely turn this season around and build on the momentum you took from Athens, Georgia. Gamecocks win this game, you can get to 4-3 with Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and App State coming up. I mean, why couldn't you be 7-3 after that? I'm not even including A&M, who's struggling right now at 3-3. I know it's in College Station, but that game will be close to a pick 'em. But I mean, you could realistically get to 7-3 if you can win this Florida game. On the flip side, which I want to preface, this is what makes college football such a great game and why we all love it. It is a week-to-week game, which is why I'm not willing to say that, oh, I'm eating crow fully. Will Muschamp is the guy. I was totally wrong, yada, yada, yada. I do eat crow for saying that. Well, I really didn't say we had no chance against Georgia, but, you know, I tip my cap. Like I said, if that's not good enough for you, I really don't care. I'm just telling you, I tip my cap to what these guys did on Saturday in Athens. I tipped my cap, and there was nobody happier than me. Trust me. But I don't even know where I was going with this. But, again, you have an opportunity to beat two straight top 10 teams, to really flip the narrative, flip everything, and, again, build off that momentum you had at Georgia and change the entire narrative of this season. Can you do it? Can you take advantage of the opportunity? Because, again, so what now? What is the great – as Will Muschamp says, oh, I know what I was going to say. This is a week-to-week game, right? One week you're a hero. The next week you're an idiot. The reason I'm not ready to say that everything is great yet, and it is right now because as a fan, God, we beat Georgia, but did you really accomplish anything if you lose – listen, if you lose to Florida, if you lose to Florida in a close game, it's going to suck. But nobody's going to sit here and tell you that was a horrible loss. Like, yeah, you know, whatever. But what if you lose to Florida and then you go lay an egg at Tennessee and you lose? You kind of undid everything you did in Athens. So, South Carolina, before you even look that far ahead, I just think South Carolina needs to take advantage of the opportunity on Saturday. They've got a great opportunity. Florida's a good football team. They're a top 10 football team. And you've got a chance to really, not just to South Carolina fans, screw what we all think, to the national perception, to recruits, to guys who are looking at this program saying, is there a pulse here? Is this program, which trajectory is this program going on, positive or negative? You beat Florida? Dude, I mean, let's flip the switch. Things are happening. Let's flip the switch. Anyways, for my prediction, I think it's a toss-up game. I really do think it's a coin flip. I've got the Gators winning this one 23-20. And I know South Carolina fans are going to come out of the woodworks at me. But again, I think it's a coin flip type game. The health of Ryan Helinski really scares me. Florida is much, much, much better than Georgia was on the outside. And I've picked South Carolina to lose four games in a row. We've won the last two. So why not keep the reverse jinx going? Now that I said it, though, I don't think it even counts. But either way, I got Florida winning this one 23-20 right now. Again, I think it's a coin flip. I don't think you can pick on the wrong side of this game, whether you're picking South Carolina or you're picking Florida. 23-20, 20-17 is a score either way. I've got the Gators edging out South Carolina. Again, I'm skeptical of the health of Ryan Helinski. I'm skeptical that he can play this entire game unless South Carolina's offensive line has an insane game. And I've got the Gators getting the win 23-20. So South Carolina fans, you want to come in my mentions, come at me, do your worst. I would love to tip my cap once again, be wrong once again, be standing in Williams-Brice Stadium, soaking it up. Hell, maybe I'll walk out of Williams-Brice, smoke another victory cigar, shoot a video, and show you guys a slice of crow pie that I eat after the game. Or maybe I'll write crow on the cigar. Hell, I don't know. I don't know. Either way, got the Gators 23-20, but it's there for the taking for South Carolina. There's no question. It is there for the taking for the Gamecocks to make a huge, 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 huge statement on Saturday. All right, let's get into some news and notes really quickly. I already talked about Israel Mokwamu and Javon Kinlaw named All-SEC Players of the Week for their performance. No surprise there. One thing I want to touch on really quickly is basketball. South Carolina picked 10th in the SEC preseason poll. Yes, basketball season is pretty much here at this point. It's almost here. The preseason polls came out and stuff. Gamecocks picked 10th in the SEC. Of 12 preseason All-SEC players, A.J. Lawson was not amongst those, which just basically reaffirms what Frank Martin said, that the preseason polls are completely meaningless and just should not be trusted at all. One other thing, which really isn't news and notes, if you will, but just something I want to say, if you can, get to Williams-Brice on Saturday. Let's make this thing a packed out, raucous environment. Listen, I've told you guys before on social media, you hear my score predictions, but there's not one time that I wake up on a game day. And I just want you guys to know this. I'm sure you already know, but there's not one time that I wake up on a game day and I think my team doesn't have a chance to win. Because I wouldn't go to the stadium if I thought that. I would not go to the stadium if I thought my team didn't have a chance. Gamecocks have the opportunity of a lifetime. And in a game like this, the crowd can make a difference. The crowd really can make a difference. If you can't go, whatever. I'm just saying if you can do it, and if you're going to be there, let's be loud. Let's be loud. Give Florida hell for 3.5 hours. See if we can't will these boys to victory. Pick up a huge win. And let's get this damn 2019 season rolling down a path towards a damn – I want to see a top 15 matchup against Clemson the last game of the season. I want to see the South Carolina team reel off 4 straight more wins after this and take on Clemson in a night game, top 15 team, Gamecocks who are 8-3, have turned this season around, whatever. Whatever the storyline is. But if nothing else, let's get this dub on Saturday. And if you can make it to Williams-Brice on Saturday, if you can't, watch it home, cheer your heart out. But if you can, and if you're going to be in there, let's be loud and let's give Florida hell, because I'll be honest with you guys, I don't really like Florida all that much either. I don't like Florida. So let's give them hell. All right, let's get into your listener questions. Got a lot of listener questions to get into. Big Dog_2003, what do you think the score will be? Like I said, I am picking Florida 23-20, but I think it's a coin flip game. 23-20, 2017, South Carolina, Florida, you cannot go wrong there. I think it's a lower scoring game. Very, very tight football game. But I've got 23-20 Florida for my score prediction. Evan M. Williams, 13. Score prediction, and how much do you think our home and field advantage will impact it? Well, I think our home field advantage, like I was just saying, could be very impactful. I really, really do. I think it could be very, very impactful. And again, I've got 23-20 Florida. Peyton Muller, 16. Run the ball and then deep shot to Edwards or Shy. I agree. You know, I think I love what South Carolina has done offensively the last couple games. Again, it hasn't been flashy. I know the offense really didn't show up for a lot of the Georgia game, but I still love the philosophy, pound the football. Unless there's an obvious glaring matchup where you know you can expose them in the pass game, don't ask Ryan Helinski to do too much. Let's establish the ground game. Let's eat up some clock. Let's hit the big plays in the passing game when they're there and get the ball to Brian Edwards and Shy Smith for sure. AJ Bowers_11, will our D-line be a big force versus their O-line? Like I said, I'm a believer in the Gamecocks defensive line. I really don't care at this point who Javon Kinlaw is lining up against. He's going to be a force. He's going to be an impact. No question. I don't care who the hell he's lining up against. And the rest of those guys on the Gamecocks defensive line, I think the Gamecocks defensive line, I'm a believer in them. I think they will give Florida fits all day long. Jones_G_, let's try this again. Nice username. Who will stand out the most against Florida? I think Shy Smith's got a chance to have a big game for South Carolina. When South Carolina opens it up, throwing the football. And I think defensively, I think a guy like T.J. Brunson going up against LaMichael Perine. I think T.J. Brunson's going to have a big game in this one as well. And that's just going with the guys that aren't the obvious, like the Holinskis and the Kinlaws. I think Kinlaw will have another huge game. What's to say he's not? J. Gray, 0911. With a win over Florida, what chance do you think we have to win the SEC East? Well, I mean, you beat Florida, the odds certainly go up, don't they? There's no question the odds go up if you beat the Florida Gators. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen. So I'd put the odds at probably 30% just because, I mean, there's a lot of things that have to go right. First off, you've got to win every game basically that you have left, and you got to have a lot of people lose. So, you know, I wouldn't put it very high, but I'm also trying to temper my own expectations because just the thought of that South Carolina could go to Atlanta sounds really absurd right now. Let's see. Bassman Caleb, realistic expectations for the rest of the season. A lot of it depends on the Florida game, man. You beat Florida, I think you can beat Tennessee. I think you can beat Vanderbilt. I think you can beat App State. So, I mean, I think 4-2, worst case, if you beat – or so, looking at Florida, if you can beat Florida, 5-2, worst case. If you lose to Florida, I think you're starting to look more at like 3-3, maybe even 2-4. Just depending. Like I said – it's a week-to-week game, man. You never know what's going to happen. Probably 3-3. I think this is a 6-6 team right now. Probably maybe 7-5. Saturday is going to tell us a lot how the rest of the season. I think Saturday is going to set the tone for the rest of the season, basically. Let's see. Scott W. Lawson, what must we do differently to beat Florida versus beating Georgia? I think a lot of it's honestly the same. I just think we've got to even elevate our play even more on the outside against Florida's receivers. We've also got to be better offensively. I mean, there's just no question. You're not going to get a pick six every game. You know what I mean? It's not going to happen. So we've got to be better offensively. You know, we've got to help that defense out. We got to stay on the field. Again, we got to establish the ground game. We got to keep Ryan Helinski upright. And then from there, kind of let the chips fall where they may. But we've got to play better offensively. There's just no question in my mind. Let's see. Shelby underscore this Jarless. How do you think the game will go? Do you think there will be another upset like UGA? I mean, I think there's a great chance for it. I mean, I really do. I don't think Florida's as good as Georgia. But, again, top 10 team. I think there's a great chance for the upset on Saturday for sure. And I don't think it would be like a massive upset. Again, South Carolina's only a 4.5-point underdog. I mean, what does Vegas know that we don't, right? That's really what you could say. What do they know that we don't? Lutz W04. If we beat Florida, could you realistically see us winning out? Listen, I'm still not getting my hopes up that we're going to beat Clemson. I know it's a night game. I'm like willing it to be a night game at this point. I know it's a home game. I know that South Carolina just beat Georgia, but I'm not going to get my hopes unrealistically high that we're going to beat Clemson when we haven't even been close to beating them in 5 years. Also, the game at College Station. I know A&M hasn't been good, but that is still a tough game. That is a tough place to play. So, realistically, no. I don't think we'll win out. I think realistically, no. We don't win out. Mr. Underscore Incredible 01, who do you think has had the better season, Helinski or Trask? Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, I think they're about the same. I think Trask has got more of a supporting cast around him. Maybe Helinski's done more with less. Helinski's also been battling injury, so there is that. But I'd say they're about even. Gamecocks.country with two questions. Was McQuamu lucky? Expectations for his future, rate him out of 10 outside of Georgia. I mean, listen, all turnovers are a little bit of luck, but great players make their own luck. So let's not say he just got lucky and the ball just happened to come to him three times. Those were great plays. I mean, yeah, the one went off the Georgia receiver's hands, but that pick six was a phenomenal play. And that pick where he dove, that was an insane play. That was talent. Expectations for his future, I think he'd be one of the best corners in the SEC. Why not? I mean, any guy that can get three picks in a game like that, he's got the potential. It's there. You know, it's there. Just got to make it happen. Rate him out of 10 outside of Georgia. I mean, I think he was probably a 6 or a 7. You know, I'd say a 6. He was a 6. He was okay. He was average. He was okay. That was kind of his coming out party, I felt like. Gamecocks.country again. Where do you rank our D-line in the SEC and compared to the nation? Right now in the SEC, I think we're a top third of the conference defensive line, no question. I think we're probably second. I think we're probably third in the SEC. I mean, we've been playing like the best defensive line in the SEC. Nationally, it's tough to say nationally. I mean, I think this is definitely a top 10, 15 defensive line, no doubt. Last question here. Section 7 guy. Can we get students and fans alike to wear Garnet? Why is that so hard? Hey, Garnet on game day. The only thing I'll say is I may not wear Garnet Saturday. And please don't hate me for that. I don't know what I'm going to wear. Haven't decided. But just wear Garnet black or white, man. Or, hey, if they want to start a Garnet out, let's do it. But I'd rather not do any of the outs. Just wear Garnet or black or white or whatever you want to wear. But wear Garnet, yes. Garnet on game days. I hear you. I agree with you. Everybody just wear Garnet and be loud as hell, all right? Wear Garnet. Let's do it. Let's do it for Section 7, guy. Wear Garnet, all right? There you go. All right. Like I said, thanks to the listener questions, guys. It's funny. We never have voicemails on the Thursday show, but the Monday show will be flooded. We'll be flooded with the voicemails. So I appreciate you guys either way for the questions, the voicemails, everything. Really, really excited. I already mentioned this, obviously, beginning the show. I'm just really excited about next week, the show coming to you daily. I'm excited to hear you guys' feedback on that. I'll be very interested to see what you guys think on that. And I think it'll be a great addition for the Spurs Up Show. All right, let's get in this interview. Fantastic interview with former Gamecocks football player, special teamers, our special teamer, tight end Alex McGrath, a great dude. He had great opinions on the Gamecocks game at Georgia this upcoming Saturday, playing for Steve Spurrier, during that era. A lot of cool and funny stories. And like I said, he's going to become a part of a mainstay of the show on Tuesdays, breaking down South Carolina football with I. Should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for this interview. It's all brought to you by our friends over at SeatGeek. SeatGeek, the best ticket buying app by far, the only ticket buying app I use, and the only one that I'd recommend. Go download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP. You're going to save $20 off your first purchase. Excuse me. They've got tickets to literally anything and everything. Guys, there are tickets still available for South Carolina, Florida. If you need your tickets for Saturday, go get them. I've already looked. There's tons left. Like I said, we need to pack the house, and you can get $20 off the ticket. There's some tickets on there like $60. You can get your tickets for $40. That's a steal. That's a ripoff for a top 10 team coming to Williams-Rice. You can sit in there for $40. Why wouldn't you do it? Anyways, you can get them to any South Carolina Gamecocks sporting events, NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB, concerts, comedy club events. Doesn't have to be sports. They've got a great ticket rating system where they rate the tickets for you based on the type of deal you're getting, so you're never going to get ripped off. You're going to have that peace of mind before you click the buy button. And really, they make the ticket buying process super simple, super easy. They really do all the work for you. So again, that's our friends over at SeatGeek. Go download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP, that's S-P-U-R-S-U-P, to save $20 off your first purchase. All right, enjoy this interview with former Gamecocks football player Alex McGrath. All right, joining us today on the Spurs Up Show is a man that played for Gamecocks football from 2005 to 2008. For the Gamecocks, he mostly played special teams mixed with tight end and wide receiver as well. A man who knows South Carolina football as good as anyone. I'm pleased to be joined by former Gamecocks football player Alex McGrath. Alex, appreciate you taking the time, man. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely, Chris. I really appreciate the invite, my man.
Absolutely. So obviously, you know, I just talked off air. We have a bunch to talk about with South Carolina going to Athens, being the Georgia Bulldogs. But I want to focus on you specifically, your career, because like I mentioned, you know, you were at South Carolina from 2005 to 2008. So you came in at a very interesting time, obviously the first teams of the Spurrier era. So, you know, take me back to the beginning, Alex, for you. What was the path to South Carolina like? And when you got to Carolina, what were those first interactions like with Steve Spurrier for you personally?
Yeah, so this is a wild and long out and drawn story. So kind of looking at it back to, you know, me being a 16, 17-year-old kid, I played quarterback in high school, and I certainly didn't have any aspirations of making it to play football on Sunday down the road. So really, like, when I was kind of going through the recruiting process and everything, it was really more about trying to leverage where I could end up that would serve me the best academically. So yeah, I ended up going to a camp after my junior year up at North Carolina and got to know that staff really well. And kind of, they've been on my radar at that point. I'm trying to remember the head coach's name, which I can't think of off the top of my head, but the OC was Gary Tranquil. And so kind of went through my whole senior year and they were talking to me and nothing really came back. And then, you know, kind of at the end of it, they decided not to offer me anything there. So really kind of at that point, I was left with going to Georgia Southern or Coastal Carolina. I'd heard like off and on from Coach Rick Stockstill from South Carolina at that point, because Lou Holtz was still in charge. And so, you know, it didn't look like anything was going to come through on that front. So I ended up committing to Georgia Southern, went down there for an official. I don't mean this negatively to anybody that went to Georgia Southern, but have you ever been to Statesboro before?
I have, yeah. I've been to Statesboro a couple of times.
Not really what I was looking for, I'll put it that way. So, you know, at that point, you know, I didn't really want to go there anymore. Didn't really have any interest in going to Coastal. So I just made kind of an offhand decision that, all right, well, this didn't work out the way I think that I wanted it to. So I ended up just going to College of Charleston just to go to school with a bunch of my buddies. And you know, I was down there for freshman orientation, and theirs was kind of weird where it called Charleston. It was an overnight freshman orientation where I believe everybody else's was just like kind of a day thing. So we had finished kind of going through all the buildings, been down there with my parents, and they left to go to their hotel. And I was just sitting out there on a bench at like 9 o'clock at night, just thinking to myself, like, this was a huge mistake. I should not have quit any of this stuff. And so, like, that next week, I ended up and reached out to Coach Stockstill again and just told him, look, I'm going to transfer January 1 to Carolina, kind of what's the walk-on procedure, all that fun stuff. So put in all that paperwork almost immediately after classes started and stayed in touch there. And then, of course, you know, at the end of the 04 season, that entire staff, oh yeah, that was obviously the year of the fight. So that whole staff got shown the exit, and then they brought Coach Spurrier in of, you know, of who I knew nobody on that coaching staff. So I got to Carolina and, you know, kind of just figured out what the walk-on procedure was for them, went through the tryouts, and actually got cut. So that 05 year, I ended up just like playing intramural sports again with a bunch of my buddies. And at some point that winter of 2005, I was like, all right, I'm going to give this one more shot and kind of see where it goes from there. And I actually went back through the walk-on tryouts again. You know, the first time I went through it, I was going to try to play wide receiver. And the second time I went through it, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to see if they'll take me as a quarterback. And so I went through that whole process, like wanting to play as a quarterback. And we got to the end of the, you know, kind of walk-on tryouts, and the director of football operations at that time was Jamie Spironis. And he just like walked up to me and he was like, hey, do you think you could play tight end? And I, having never played anything in my football career other than quarterback, so like at this point, I've never blocked a soul in my entire life. And I was like, oh yeah, no, definitely, I can 100% do that. And so that's how I ended up getting on the team for spring practice. And so that was obviously like a huge wake up call for me going through all that, because I think I was probably a shade over 200 pounds, and I'm close to 6'1", so I'm not like a small human being, but trying to block an SEC defensive end was that was gonna take some time to get used to.
For sure. So what was the, I know it's interesting, especially with guys that are walk-ons. I mean, we had a couple on the show, and it's like kind of the differences between being like a scholarship player and a walk-on. So for you, I mean, was there, when was the first time you even got to chat with Spurrier? Because I feel like he's a very, he sticks to his quarterbacks anyways. I mean, we've had guys on there to play defense that said like they didn't hear from Spurrier really until like their second or third year even there. I mean,
yeah.
What was kind of, because I know obviously the vibe around Carolina football was extremely high. I mean, you know, being there, obviously when he got hired, it's just a new energy was put in the program. But I mean, for you to be somebody that was on that team and in that program, he had to be pretty special. But was there a moment where he acknowledged you, or you guys had conversation or anything like that? Or
yeah, actually when they brought us up to tell us who they were bringing out for the spring from those walk-on tryouts, Spurrier was actually there. So that was the first time I got to interact with him at all, which was just, you know, short, sweet, just a couple of quick pleasantries, and that was it. It really, from there, like most of my interaction with him was offensive team meetings, like going through spring practice, film study, all that kind of fun stuff. So for me, like I was really in the room with him almost every single day from day one. So interaction wise, he was always around and in those meetings. We rarely did individual position meetings at that point. Most of the time, I would tell you 90% of the time, offense watched film altogether. Mm-hmm. So he was always in there for that. And for the defensive guys, he was never on that end of the hallway. So I can completely see how that would have come up, because he was just always in there with us.
Right. So for you, like I said, you get there 2005, and I, like I said, I didn't know that you actually played intramural sports that first year. Were you like a fan basically in the stands watching the team and stuff like that? I mean, was that kind of, I mean, I know you were wanting to play obviously, but did you go to the games or?
Oh yeah. And that was always a thing too. Like, so I really grew up more in South Florida, and my dad was like not into college football at all, and neither was my mom. Like, my dad was from Buffalo, so he loved the Bills, and my mom loved the Cowboys, which made for some interesting conversations in the mid-90s. But, you know, like, neither one of them were really into it at all. So I didn't really have, like, a favorite college team. I mean, when we were down there, you know, the Hurricanes were obviously incredibly good. Florida State was really good. Florida was really good. So, you know, even in that epicenter of college football at the time, you know, there wasn't really an allegiance either way with either one of my parents. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we got back up here. And actually, the kind of a funny offshoot of that story, like, you know, my mom was terrified of me playing football as a kid, so she never let me. And so, you know, I didn't actually ever put a football helmet on until I was a sophomore in high school. And of course, like 6 months into that first season, I tore my ACL in like four different pieces. So maybe mom was right on that front, but you know, it was just never something that was like super, my parents were into, like they were more basketball, baseball people. So, you know, from an allegiance standpoint or being a fan of Carolina, I just loved football in general from the first time I was able to go out there and do it. So I loved going to the games and tailgating and doing all that fun stuff on the side that first year I was there.
For sure. So, you know, I talked about, again, you were there, you know, you're with the team, started 2006, that spring. What was sort of your, and again, you're talking about you played tight end, a position you hadn't played at all in your football career. What was sort of that welcome to college football moment for you, or welcome to SEC, or a guy you took on? It's going to be a long process of, it's like you said, you never blocked anybody. I can imagine. I mean, South Carolina had some good defensive linemen on that 06, the team that you were on. So I'd imagine you went up against some pretty legit dudes on the other side of the ball.
Oh yeah. No, there are probably too many to recount of that first spring practice. The one that immediately pops into my mind, there was a power play where the tight end had to put a down block on the defensive end, and Lemieux Jean-Pierre was the defensive end at that time. And he had to have been close to 260, 270 at that point. So I was giving up, you know, a third of my body weight trying to knock him down. And I remember I went into that and like got into his chest, and he just moved me like you would move like a tackling dummy out of the way. And I, of course, like end up on the ground and walk back to the other side. And like, it's funny, like going through that, like, especially like during practice at that point, cause there's just so much going on and all the coaches are watching so many different things. Like nobody really said anything to me when I got back over there, but like in the back of your head, and I'm sure everybody else you've had on would relate this to, like anytime something like that happens in practice, it's not necessarily getting yelled at after it happens. It's knowing you're going to have to watch that on tape for, you know, an hour the next day in front of all of your like peers and just get roasted by the coaches. So, you know, like that was definitely the first one that came in where it was a welcome to the SEC moment for me.
For sure. So we talked about a little bit off air, Alex, but I want you to kind of dive into it. Just kind of the position changes you went through at Carolina from tight end to wide receiver. You played special teams, like I mentioned. Like, talk about just for you, you know, 2006 and then beyond, obviously, throughout your career. I mean, what was that like, switching up positions? And I mean, kind of having to learn on the fly. Like you said, you only played quarterback in high school. I mean, what was that like for you, just kind of bouncing all over the field, if you will?
Yeah, so I mean, the special teams is pretty self-explanatory, especially from like, you know, kickoff return, punt return, field goal, all that kind of stuff. Was just, you know, you stay in your lane, you block your man. That stuff's pretty self-explanatory. What was tough on the front end going to tight end was, you know, especially the blocking aspect of it, where there's a lot of skill involved in that I had never even attempted in my entire career to that point, where nobody had taught me any of this stuff. I had never worked on it. So, you know, coming in trying to do those kind of things was incredibly difficult. And, I'm eternally thankful to Rob Pavlovic, David Lagus, Andy Boyd, those guys for, you know, working with me as much as they did on that front end. Because, you know, going through all that stuff, especially like on the passing side of things, like I was always really fast. So coming in, like running routes, catching balls, like I think that's the entire reason like they even kept me around when they did, was because I could get out there and do those things. You know, from a blocking standpoint, it just really turned into, like, once I could learn the technique of it was really just trying to put on as much weight as I could and getting to that point where I could hold my own on that stuff. And so, you know, going through that first spring, you know, we get through the end of the spring game, we get back into fall practice, you know, it really kind of turned into, for me, being at tight end, where, you know, Andy went down with an injury, I believe, after we played, I'm trying to think who the second game of that season, Florida Atlantic, and went down with an injury. And then Pabo went down with an injury as well. And it really kind of turned in at that point, like, you know, Jared Cook had moved back the wide receiver. Then so it was really just like me, David Lagus, and Pabo available at tight end. And I went into the Wofford game that year as number two on the depth chart, which was like which was crazy. Like looking back at everything, it was just insane to kind of like get to that point where I was like, okay, I might actually have to contribute on offense, four games into the season here. So, you know, and really going through all those fall practices and, you know, Coach Spurrier watching everything, Coach Chatham watching everything, who was our tight ends coach, you know, early on in fall practice, Coach Spurrier, I can't remember what set we were running, but I went in and put my hand on the ground and he blew the whistle and he was like, hold on here. All right, going forward, he's looking at me. He's like, going forward, anytime that you get in the game at tight end, I just want you to split out a little bit and stand up. Like, we're just going to do it that way. So, you know, it really kind of precluded me from even trying to go in and run any of those power plays at that point. And really, you know, kind of from there on out, that's what I did. Anytime I went into, you know, practice, it was always standing up. Anytime I went into a game, it was always standing up. So, like, I really never – I guess progressed to the point where I could have gotten in there and blocked down on a defensive lineman like that. So, you know, when you're talking about the transition between position groups, I would tell you, like, coming in playing quarterback and having, you know, what little coaching we got in high school, you know, you understand like route concepts and where everybody's supposed to be and kind of how that all fits into coverage. So learning route trees and how to play different positions like that was I'd never really done it before, but it was all kind of second nature because I was having to direct all that stuff prior to getting to South Carolina anyway. So I would tell you the learning curve there wasn't nearly as steep, and probably why you see a lot of like athletic kids coming out of high school playing quarterback, moving to wide receiver, they can make that transition so easily, is because you have a base knowledge of where all that's supposed to go anyway. So that transition is not nearly as time consuming or difficult as you would think it would be. I mean, it's a fact that was not lost on my mom when, you know, coming to spring games or open practices and things like that. And, you know, people telling her, it's like, wow, he really catches the ball really well for never having played that. My mom always firing back, well, I mean, he played quarterback before this. All he did was stand around and play catch all day. It makes total sense. So, yeah, like from those kind of transitory standpoints, it wasn't super difficult to learn all that.
For sure. So it's kind of funny. I was just thinking you named off a lot of names there. Andy Boyd, who we've had on the show, Pavlovic. It's funny, before the show, I was doing some research and I was reading an article, I think it was 2007, and they were talking about the depth of the tight end position, and Foxy Foxworth was one of the names. Yep. And we actually did something in the offseason, I think it was who's the most random Gamecock you can ever think of. And a lot of people said Foxy Foxworth. Would you say he's got like probably the best name ever? Because I think he's got to be like all name team in South Carolina history, I feel like.
Oh, undoubtedly. Like, I don't even know how you get a nickname like that, but that's incredible.
For sure. So I want to talk to you about, you know, this is something we sort of chatted about previously, Alex, but I want to talk to you about, you know, right now, you know, moving to current day South Carolina football and the program that Will Muschamp is building and kind of the process he's gone through. You know, a lot of people have tried to compare the Spurrier and the Muschamp eras to each other. The records are very, very close, and kind of the building process has been somewhat similar. But, you know, speaking on Spurrier, because you were actually a part of that program, and, you know, he's obviously a Hall of Famer, won a national title, you know, led the greatest run in South Carolina football history. You know, what would you say made you guys, as far as speaking on the success of a college football program as a whole, what would you say was what were the things he did that made you guys successful under Spurrier that eventually led to that great run? As far as the inner workings of a college football program, like, what is it specifically that maybe fans don't see or don't think about that goes into, you know, building a top-notch program?
So I think that's a really good question. I think from a like coaching X's and O's standpoint, I think he just brings with him a decided advantage on how he sees the field, especially when he's calling plays. So, you know, I would tell you, like, the first offensive meeting I ever sat in with him, I learned more about the game of football in 30 minutes with him than I learned playing 3 years in high school. It was honestly mind blowing because, like, watching how he called things and kind of how everything fit together, you know, watching rotating coverages and this is what you do here, here, and here. Like, it was like, wow, if somebody had explained that to me when I was in high school, I probably would have had a better career. But, you know, watching like him do that kind of stuff, or especially like in game management, like he could stand on the sideline and like, I don't know if you ever stood on the sideline at a college football game, but like, you really can't see as well as you would want to, or right. Definitely not as well as you could up in the box. And he could stand there and see everything, like just kind of at the drop of a hat, and know what to change to, how to get out of this, what we need to get to, without like being on top of it, looking down and seeing where everybody was. So I think like inherently we had a built-in advantage there just because of his offensive genius from, you know, a schematic standpoint on like laying the foundation there to get the program to where it was 11, 12, and 13. I really think on the front end was, you know, having somebody like Steve Spurrier just builds excitement within the program to say, like, we've got this Hall of Famer, we got this guy that's won national championships, we got this guy that's an SEC legend, and inherently that's going to bring a lot of attention to you, that's going to bring recruits' attention to you. So, like, that's definitely step one. Step two was upgrading the facilities we had, which, you know, by run-of-the-mill standards were great, but for, you know, competing in the SEC, you know, the facilities, at least when I was there, were not anywhere close to what they are today. And what the guys now have, like, in a football facility, in a locker room, all that stuff. So, like, getting all of those things upgraded, getting people to buy in. And then really, I think, you know, it's like the time management aspect of it and just kind of what goes into it, how much time you spend recruiting, how much time you spend watching tape and putting together game plans. You know, I can't really speak to what like the current administration is doing. But you know, those are all the things you have to do to be successful. And I think, you know, just to get to where we got to, you know, just happen to coincide with, you know, we've upgraded all of these facilities. We had an incredibly strong recruiting base in South Carolina that we were able to strike when the iron was hot and brought all those guys in and had this huge run of success. So, you know, from a, like a fundamental building block standpoint, I think, you know, having the right OC, the right DC, the right strength coach, like he had all of those things. And I know Tori talked about that on your podcast with Craig Fitzgerald, but the guy that was there before him, Mark Smith, I would tell you was equally as good as Craig was. So, you know, those kinds of pieces in that puzzle are what allow you to build to that success.
For sure. So let's move forward, Alex, to what happened obviously over the weekend. Gamecocks with a huge, massive upset, 20-17 over Georgia, double overtime. I would probably argue probably the biggest upset in school history when you just factor in the point spread. I mean, South Carolina was a 24.5 point underdog going on the road. I mean, Georgia's a top three team, and you get the win. I mean, just kind of simply put, you know, I've said my piece on Monday's show, and it's funny. It was kind of hard to put into words because it was something where I was still in shock, I think, 24 hours later as of what had happened. Obviously, was so excited and so thrilled that I don't know that words can even summarize the emotions. But I mean, watching that game for you, you know, Rodrigo Blankenship misses that kick and South Carolina gets the win. I mean, what are your thoughts for a team that this season to me has been one of the craziest South Carolina football seasons I've ever seen, because this team has gone from completely dead to showing a little bit of life to completely dead again to now people are talking about South Carolina, if they can beat Florida, could potentially even run the table and compete to go to Atlanta, which is not even a conversation. I didn't think we'd even be in that universe in this 2019 season. But, I mean, for you, when you watched that game and South Carolina getting that win, I mean, what were your takeaways from Saturday?
Just, I mean, more than anything else, to be honest, I'm right there with you. Like, as soon as that game was over, like, I was looking at something, I was like, wait, can we still win the East? which is insane because, you know, we lost to North Carolina 6 weeks ago. So, you know, like the roller coaster there is just has been madness. But like watching that game, I think more than anything else was Like when you're watching, you know, 2010, 11, 12, 13, I think for every, I'm certainly not just speaking for myself, but for everybody that's a fan of the university, like it was fun to wake up on fall Saturdays because you had something to look forward to. You had something to be super excited about to see what was going to happen. And like kind of post 2014, really through Saturday, it was not that same feeling. And it was just like, that's coupled with us, you know, underperforming expectations in addition to Clemson turning into world beaters at the exact same time, which that's a whole nother podcast, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, like those two things kind of commingling. So I think more than anything, it was so like refreshing to see us do that again, just because we haven't seen it in 6 years. And like it just gives it, hope springs eternal, right? So you see that happen and you just kind of start piecing everything together to say, well, maybe we can do this. And it's, you know, to finally see that happen after, you know, opportunity after opportunity opportunity squandered, more or less, because the only ranked team we've beaten since Muschamp's been there was Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee, that first year. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was sort of the start of them falling apart. So, I mean,
yes. Yeah. So, I mean, that was 2016. So, through today, so you almost got four seasons where that didn't happen. And to watch it happen in like an exciting fashion like that was refreshing. I mean, more than anything else, you know, I think it's put something back into all of us to be in that same place we were 6-7 years ago, where you're excited again to wake up and talk about it and look at it, because you know you get beaten like a drum for that many years against quality opponents. You almost don't look forward to it anymore, and I think that's the biggest thing that this Georgia win is going to do for us as a program moving forward, is it makes people excited to be there again. Because I mean, I know you talked about it, you know, going into that Kentucky game after you get blown out on the road against Missouri, it's like, okay, how many people are going to show up to even watch this?
Right.
And, you know, we had a great turnout because, you know, Carolina fans are the best fans in the world. And now you've given everybody something to be excited about again. And I think that is the biggest thing that this win is going to do for us going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I just speaking to kind of what you said, I said on Monday's episode that was the most, that's the most genuinely happy and the most joy I've had after a South Carolina football game since the 2014 Georgia game. I don't think since then there's been a game that, you know, we've won some nice ones, but nothing like that. Nothing like against, you know, one of your bitter rivals. I mean, obviously, you know, Georgia ranks right up there with Clemson, I would say, for most South Carolina fans as far as the level of hatred that they feel.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that game Saturday, it's just – it's crazy, man, because, you know, it's – we've been, you know my feelings, and we've been, you know, I feel like everybody on social media has got a take, if you will, on kind of the coaching situation. I've been I was very open about it, my feelings on Muschamp and just kind of what happened after UNC and going through the season. And it's very funny because we have a decent portion of the fan base that their first question to me is not about the Georgia game. It's like, are you still on the Firewall Muschamp train? And I think the one thing that people don't realize is like when I say those things, I don't want to be right necessarily. I've said all season I want Will Muschamp and this program to turn it around and show us that progress we're looking for. And the one thing I was encouraged about, or have been encouraged about since Kentucky, is we're kind of finally starting to see that Will Muschamp defense play out. That was the thing that I think bothered me the most early on this season was, you know, you have a coach that, you know, the season's going the way it is, and we're not even good on defense in year four. But Saturday was the best I've seen a Gamecocks defense play, I mean, probably since 2013. I mean, because even that 2014 team, we were bad defensively. And, I mean, you know,
we were not good. No.
It's been kind of a struggle, Muschamp's first couple of years, like getting your guys on that side, getting the recruits. And, you know, that's why the start of this year was like, that's not really a good excuse because it's year four. But, man, I have not seen a Gamecocks defense be that dominant like they were on Saturday since 2013. But we'll move right into it because, again, Alex, I mean, you know, you've seen my opinions and my takes and stuff like that. And I'll tell you straight up right now, I mean, you know, what we saw on Saturday is what we needed to see. It was a win that Will Muschamp and this program had, just they needed that type of win. Like you were saying, just to inject positivity and excitement back into the program, but for Will Muschamp and his job security, if you will, I mean, winning a game like that, and I think that's all the fan base was really asking for, to you know, even just to compete in a game like that, but certainly to win a game like that. You know, it's like I said, it's just funny because I have so many people ask me, are you still fired, Will Muschamp? Like, they want me to admit I was wrong. It's like, well, I mean, I want to see us to continue to make progress. Now it's like, now we're going to really see the coaching job of what do you do with that win after? Do you go out against Florida and show up and play well, or do you let that emotional hangover happen? You're playing a noon game. Like, you know, how do you come back out? But obviously, it's a step in the right direction for sure from all parties, from the team, the coaching, the program, everybody. And I think it's a huge step in the right direction for the program that Will Muschamp is trying to build and is building at Carolina.
Oh, 100%. And, like, you're not wrong. And, if you get roasted for that kind of stuff on social media, so be it. But, like, you know, like truthfully, like, if you look at it, like, where we were as a program, you know, under Spurrier, I mean, yeah, it didn't end well. And, you know, you still see the Spurrier's a quitter takes all over the place, which is just, that is what it is. But that's insane. But, you know, looking at it from, like, where we were those 3 years to where it got to, you know, losing the Citadel at home. And then you kind of look at it from, like a, this is probably not the right way to say this, but, like, from the Forbes rankings, I think we're, like, the most 18th most valuable program in the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you watch, like, the results. Let me go back on that. So you know that going into it, and then you end up trying to hire Tom Herman and a couple other guys, mm-hmm. all of it falls
Kirby
through.
Smart, one of them. Georgia could get.
Yeah. Kirby's definitely one of them. And, you know, you end up with the guy that couldn't win at Florida. And, you know, that comes in. It's, you know, all about, you know, he didn't know how to coach offense. And, you know, the offense is abysmal that first year. And then they try to make it better. It doesn't get better. You try to make it better year three. It doesn't get better. You know, you walk into the North Carolina game, and it's like nothing has changed from day one. And so, you know, taking that into totality, you know, I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I'm in the same camp that you are. It's just like, I don't dislike Coach Muschamp as a person.
For sure.
But, you know, you got, I mean, for us to be paying you that kind of money, you need to.
And it's the nature of the business. It's a results oriented business, you know, just like anything else. I mean, I try to tell people, it's like, you go to your job and you underperform, or, you know, especially if you've been there, if you're tenured, I mean, there's going to be some criticism to go along with it. Why is being the head coach of a college football program any different? Like you said, especially when you're getting paid millions among millions of dollars every single year. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some criticism for it. But I think the biggest thing that people, you know, Alex, misunderstand, and again, the social media stuff is, I take it as all in good fun. I love the banter. I think if we all agreed on everything, it would get really, really boring. And there probably wouldn't be podcasts or independent media outlets where people voiced opinions. Like, yeah, I don't think that would exist if we all agreed. But I think the thing that people have got to realize, it's, a lot of people just want to be right. And me, I actually want to be wrong when it comes to the bad stuff. And the thing is that college football, I was telling my buddy this, it's so crazy because, I mean, literally how we were feeling a week ago today after the bye week versus today, it's such a, college football is such a week to week game. And I think that's what makes it, you know, arguably the greatest game on the planet, because literally you can go from, you know, literally 2 weeks ago, I think on the Monday of the Kentucky week, I literally tweeted and said, where would you find any optimism for this game? We've lost to Kentucky 5 years in a row. We're coming off a terrible loss at Missouri. Ryan Helinski doesn't look healthy. Like, this program is headed down the drain, it feels like. Fast forward 2 weeks later, you've beaten Kentucky and you just beat the University of Georgia. And now people are talking about you possibly contending to win the East. I mean, it's just, college football. No. Like, it's such a week to week game. It's crazy. It really is.
No, it's insane. And it, like, even past, like, the winning of the East, like, if you really look at it instead, you know, kind of taking all that into consideration, you're like, all right, let's hypothetically say we win out and we get to the SEC championship game, somehow win that. Like, at 10-3, having beaten 1, 2, and 3 in the polls, It's a fascinating thought experiment, just like to try to like consider what the playoff committee would even do with that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because you think, I mean, if South Carolina beats Florida, it's very realistic they don't lose another SEC game. I mean, you go to Knoxville, You play Vanderbilt, and then you go to Texas A&M, which before the season, I was really worried about the A&M game. I mean, A&M's sitting at 3-3. I mean, South Carolina got more votes in the AP poll than Texas A&M. They've got their own struggles going on. So, again, yeah, it's crazy how week-to-week it is. But that's what I was saying, Alex. I don't know if you'd agree with this, but to me it's like, okay, you won that big game you had to win. Now I feel like this will almost be more just as much, if not more, of a measure of coaching going into the Florida game. Can you bring the same intensity you had? Because, I mean, obviously you have talent if you can go beat Georgia. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say Georgia played their best game, and if they played their A game, we played our A game, that we would win. I think Georgia, top to bottom, has got more overall talent than South Carolina. Like, there's nobody I don't think that would say that was a crazy take, but we did the little things right. We out-executed them. We looked, for the first time in the Will Muschamp tenure, I can remember, Alex, I really felt like we looked like the better coach team. We looked like the more motivated team. We looked like we're more ready to play, and we simply just out-executed Georgia. Now, to me, it's like it's almost a just as great of a measure of coaching. How can you bring that same intensity and that same focus that you had against Georgia into a noon kick with Florida? Because to me, it's like, you know, maybe not so much Florida, because I think that's a coin flip game. Florida's a top 10 team. You know, if you lose to Florida by a touchdown or whatever, the Vegas spread is 6.5. Nobody's going to sit here and say, you know, fire Muschamp. You know, that's a tough game, whatever. But, for example, to me, if you go to Knoxville and you go out there, and I know Tennessee's a bad football team, but if you go out there unprepared and unfocused and somehow lose that one, you kind of undo everything you did in Athens winning that game. I mean, it's not going to make me feel any less good about the Georgia win, because I hate Georgia, and I just – the fact we finally have bragging rights over somebody. But I'm just saying, as far as, like, coaching, it's like I just want to see continued progress. Like, are you going to lose games? It's going to happen. But how do you build off one of the biggest wins, if not the biggest win in program history? You know what I mean? To me, that's just – it's just going to be very, very interesting how this team comes out against Florida and for the rest of the season, because – I just think it can go one of two ways, and you can either bottle up what you did at Georgia and carry into the rest of the year and have crazy momentum, or you can maybe let it get to your head. I mean, we've seen South Carolina teams win a big game and they let it get to their head. I mean, I think first one off the top of my head, the 2010 Alabama game, when you beat Alabama, the next week you go to Kentucky and you lose, and you're like, how does this happen? It's just, you know, I mean, how does South Carolina handle it? You know, how do they handle – because I don't think this is a team or a program that is under Will Muschamp had to – handle success. You know what I mean? It's like this is the first bit of major, major success that we've had. It's like, how does this team, this coaching staff, now handle this? You know what I mean? Now that there's so many new things on the table and there's this new energy in the team. I'm just, like I said, I'm very curious to see that, because, again, I think it's going to say a lot about the coaching staff getting these guys back to square one and getting them motivated and, you know, taking it, that whole coach speak thing, taking it one game at a time. But it does sort of apply to this situation, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and this is going to be the hardest job he's had to do since he's been in South Carolina, because now you've got to go out there and you've got to, like, bring down, like, a whole slew of 19- and 20-year-old guys who are floating around on cloud nine right now and convince them that in 6 days there's a equally as good team getting ready to walk into the stadium that's going to try to hit you in the mouth again.
Yeah.
And trying to bring them down from where they are right now and prep them for that, that's going to be the hardest thing this coaching staff had to do probably since they've been there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to motivate guys after a loss. I mean, you want to win. But after – I don't know. I just think after that big win – again, I'm not sitting here predicting that it's going to – you know, obviously beating Georgia is a great thing for this team and this program. But like you're saying, like staying humble, if you will, because everybody's going to be patting the guys on the – which they should. They should get a pat on the back for doing what they did. But it just – the conversation, I don't know if you heard, that I had with Torrey Gurley after the Alabama game, and just kind of the way, you know, everybody's patting the back, the ESPN trucks are all over the place, like everybody's telling us how great we are, and you don't lock in and focus. And, you know, I mean, it's like Kirby said after the game Saturday, in the SEC, you can lose any week. And, I mean, it's just, especially, you know, when you're taking on a team like Florida, who, again, say they're overrated, say whatever, I mean, they're a top 10 team. I mean, that's just kind of the fact of the matter. So, I certainly don't think South Carolina is going to overlook Florida. I mean, we're still an underdog, which I think is great. I'm glad to see it. I don't know. I kind of like the whole underdog aspect. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, this is going to be – it's going to be just very interesting to me see how this team responds the rest of the season, because, like I said, I don't even know that it's sunk in for me yet. As crazy as it sounds, like, if you beat Florida, you could realistically make a charge to Atlanta, which is just not – I just – saying that doesn't even feel right, like you said, because this is a team that lost to North Carolina 6 weeks ago, but it is the reality. So, I mean, it's
– Oh, yeah, well, especially because Missouri is ineligible.
Yeah, so, that too.
I mean, that really makes the entire plot thicken there. But, no, you're 1,000% right. I mean, being an underdog should be helpful there because you can kind of take that us against the world mentality. Nobody believed you would get here, but it's just like how effectively can you get that? How effectively can you get everybody to buy into that?
Now, what was Spurrier's motivational tactics, if you will, for like, you know, I know you weren't on the team that 05 season, but I mean, heck, that 06 season, really throughout 07, I think at Georgia, you guys went up there and won. Obviously, that was a great win. What was sort of his motivational tactics, if you will, for keeping you guys? Because, I mean, we all hear the coach speak that every week is a season and you take it one game at a time. I know Spurrier's big thing was like no opponent's greater than the other. I mean, every game was exactly the same for Spurrier is at least what I've heard from former players. But, like, what were his motivational tactics as far as getting you guys ready to play?
So that's an interesting question because it's so like knowing a bunch of the guys that were on the team under Holtz, you know, like he's like a paid motivational speaker. So like they would talk all the time about how he would have all of these like techniques lined up for everybody. Like we're going to do like this meditation, or he would give this like rousing speech like right before, you know, you head out to the tunnel to run out to 2001. That was not Spurrier's cup of tea, I would say. I mean, it was really just, you know, we're better. You're just as good as this team, or you're better than this team. Let's go out there and kind of prove it to everybody. It wasn't like there wasn't like some grandiose speech like you would see in a movie or anything like that. It wasn't anything, at least from what I heard, compared to what Holtz was. So, I mean, from a motivational tactic standpoint, I don't know that he really did anything all that special other than, you know, just he made us believe that we belonged where we were in that conversation. Because really, when he had gotten there, like South Carolina football had done, you know, nothing to date other than win that 1969 ACC championship. Yeah. So, you know, watching kind of the talent increase in those first 2 years or first 3 or 4 years for him, you know, I would tell you probably the most motivational thing that I ever heard him say was when we beat Houston in the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, December of 06. After, you know, we all came back in off the field or playing with a trophy, taking pictures with our family, all that fun stuff. We come back in the locker room. And I remember we were getting ready to break it down. And he kind of just was real quiet, looked around. He's like, all right, guys, we're going to start breaking it down on something a little different now. He's like, it's SEC on three. And like that jacks like all of us up because we knew like he'd been there before. He had seen all these things before and gotten teams to that title, and now he believed that we could do the same thing. I mean, 07 didn't work out that way. Started off in a great fashion, but then just completely the wheels came off that one quickly there at the end. But you know, like that was probably the biggest motivator for me and, you know, most of the other guys I know that were there, was that he believed that we could go do those things that he did at Florida. And so that would be what I would tell you the best motivator was.
For sure. So, obviously, Alex, had a great conversation. I'm going to get you out of here. Before I do, though, going back to your career, you know, when you take a look back at it, what would you say was your favorite memory as a South Carolina football player?
So, favorite memory for me was – okay, so I got two here. So, first one, we beat Clemson at Clemson in 2006. And so, like, because they don't have any rules – on people coming onto the field after a game, which I don't understand how that's possible, but they don't. And so, you know, like that happens and like all my family comes down, all my best friends are down there dancing around the field. Like that was an amazing memory. Favorite memory number two. So we're in the fall camp, my senior year. I was the fortunate one to get put on scholarship. So that was, those two are definitely my favorite memories.
Yeah, I was going to say that the whole Clemson thing coming on the field, it's like I guess that's a cool tradition when you win, but it has to be like the most agonizing thing when you lose to just – You know, it's funny. I've been to Clemson a couple of times. I've never been there when South Carolina beat Clemson. And I'm like, I told my brother, I'm like, one of these days I'm going to make the trip and we're going to win. I'm going to recreate the Steve Tannehill standing on the Paul picture. We're going to have to do that. So that may be the most liked picture we ever throw up on the social media waves for sure. If we can ever make that happen again, which it will eventually, but we need to make it happen sooner rather than later for sure.
Oh yeah. No. And the best part is nobody can stop you. So, I mean,
exactly. you
could definitely do it.
Yeah. Might have some Clemson fans swinging at me. Hey, actually one more last question, since we're speaking on defacing other teams' fields, what's your take on Hedgegate, which is basically what it should be called, with the Georgia fans said about the hedges? I think it's the most silly thing I've ever seen, but I'm curious. Did you guys do that in 2007? Did you guys rip up the hedges and take some souvenirs with you or no?
I didn't. I can't speak for everybody, but I don't recall that being a thing. I mean, Georgia in 2007 wasn't a top five program
at that point.
Right. So
it wasn't like huge – I mean, it was an upset, but not a – crazy, unthinkable upset.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly weren't like 3.5 touchdown underdogs or anything like that. I mean, I was actually talking to one of my best friends about this this weekend after the game. Just like, do you think it would have been more disrespectful if we had like pulled the Baker Mayfield and planted the Gamecock flag on the GD, or is it worse to like take pieces of the hedges that are going to grow back in 36 hours? I mean, I get where they're coming from, where, you know, they're looking at it as, you know, these guys, be us at home, show some class, don't deface our beloved hedges.
Well, here's the thing, I think nobody –
talking about branches. I
think the thing nobody's saying, too, that day specifically, they hyped it up as, like, the 90th anniversary of the hedges specifically. So, I mean, they kind of set themselves up for that, I feel like.
I'll put it like this. I think there are many more things you could choose to be upset about, and this seems pretty low on the totem pole.
Yeah, so, I think it's more so Georgia fans deflecting from how upset they are, Kirby Smart and them losing that football game. So,
I mean, it's not like, you know, we got like Al and Dadeville running in there with poison to dump on the hedges or anything like that. So, on the grand scheme of things, I would let that go if I was a Georgia fan, but I can't speak for them.
Yeah, and now that we're talking about it, I'm like, God, I wish there was some way to get my hands on a piece of the hedge and like frame it and put it up in the man cave. That would be, I don't know how that would happen, but that would be legendary. We need to make that happen. But Alex, appreciate you.
Go down to the next game and clip one off.
Yeah, exactly. Alex, appreciate you taking the time, man. Always a pleasure. I mean, again, it's great to talk Gamecock football with you, and definitely will not be the last time we do so. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, absolutely, bud. Enjoyed it. Keep doing your thing. We all enjoy it. And go Cox.
For sure. So for Alex McGrath, I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of the Spurs Up Show.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.